Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The following episode was recorded in front of a live streaming audience on Saturday, November the 2nd, 2024.
You know who you are?
Steven is my name.
Even Steven.
Will you say something, Steven?
Steven or Else Media.
You're listening to the Superman Super Show, episode number 74, Superman versus the Rainmaker.
Hello and welcome to the Superman Super Show. I'm a host, my name is Steven, and 1,000 miles over there to my right is another host, Mr. Ed Moore.
Howdy.
Hi, Ed. And of course, when I go to my right, you're not there on the screen, you're on the other side. So I don't know if that confuses people who watch live, but...
That's all right.
Well, looking at my screen, you're to the right of me.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that's the same way on your end.
No, you are okay. To my left. See? As I look, which is interesting because on my camera, to do that, I have to hold up my right hand. But as I look, you're over this
way.
So
see, that's
cameras
my right.
And
it's the whole non-mirror thing so we can have the Superman logo actually say Superman.
Right. The correct way. Yeah. Yeah.
I always glance at these every time we do one. Once it's done, I always get on the YouTube just to look at it and see how it looks.
To see how, how did that come out? I know how it looked when I did it.
That's right. That's right. And then I always go, I need to upgrade that computer, man. Because I'm just like,
you're fine, dog. Like I was saying.
I know. I don't care.
We're guerrilla podcasters. You know, we started this shit way back in the day when CGS was at episode 100 and 200 back.
That's right.
You know, yeah. So
that's right.
Whatever. It's, you know, we're not the big radio with the big boom and the huge table. And it's like, no, man, no. I have a laptop. This camera is on a laptop. I'm reading off of a laptop. Now, I will say, I do have a Blue Yeti over here next to me. That is my biggest expense for podcasting, like in... in 15 years that I've done it, this is like 90% of the money that I have spent, and it is the biggest single purchase I've done. So,
And really, when it comes to professional microphones, the Blue Yeti is very inexpensive. You know, it's why a lot of people use them because they're good mics, but they don't break the bank. And you know, I'm a guerrilla broadcaster as well. However, at the end of the day, the final product, I try to make it sound as freaking good as possible with what little resources I have.
Sure.
You know, but yeah.
And I do want to throw out there for anyone that is listening live or will be listening to these podcasts in the future, the Rainmaker, Steven mentioned, that is not Kazuchika Okada. It's not that Rainmaker for those of you that are wrestling fans. So it's...
Okay, it's a wrestling thing.
Yeah, that he's he formerly was part of New Japan Pro and maybe some others early in his career. Now he's with AEW and so the Rainmaker, that's kind of his thing. When he comes out, they drop like dollar bills, and his finishing move he calls the Rainmaker. So that's
nice.
Why the
Very
nickname.
Nice.
Yeah. So
well, okay, go ahead.
I was going to say you mentioned something. I believe it would have been early last week about having kind of a movie marathon, Halloween-based, that you and your daughter participate in. Is that correct?
Yes. For those of us watching us, or for those of you watching live, of course, this is just a couple days after Halloween. I don't know when this will go up on the feed. It'll be a month or two after Halloween.
Yeah, who cares?
But a couple of years back, I just decided on Halloween, I think I was off, and I decided I was going to watch Shaun of the Dead because it's a good, you know, spooky but not spooky type of movie. I'm not really into the horror movies too much, but Shaun of the Dead's one of my favorites. And my daughter, my middle daughter, because I got four kids. I got a stepdaughter and then two daughters and a son. But my Rana, who's still at home, she decided she was going to watch it with me, and she really enjoyed it. So I said, well, let's just watch the other two movies in the Cornetto Three Flavors trilogy, which is Shaun of the Dead, Hot Fuzz, and World's End. And so we watched all three of them. This was about three, four Halloweens ago, and that has just become our Halloween thing now. Every Halloween, we those three movies, and it's kind of fun to point out, this guy is in all three of the movies, and it's not Simon Pegg, it's not Nick Frost, but this guy's in all three, and that guy's in all three, and this, it's kind of fun to do that, and we always seem to find something new to laugh at each year, which is also kind of fun, but I love those movies. Every time we finish, we end with the third one, which is World's End, and if you've seen the movie, it ends with a post-apocalyptic kind of world, and I really wish they would do a sequel to it. I want to see more of them, their characters living in this post-apocalyptic world, because it's everything that leads up to it, and then it ends, and I want to see more. And I think they need to do another movie, and they're all, because it's Nick Frost, it's Simon Pegg, but then the director Edgar Wright, he's the same director. It's the three of them, and I think the producer Neera Park, she's involved as well. But Simon Pegg and Nick Frost have reached an age, which is my age. I don't know, they're older. I think it would be a lot of fun to see them in a post-apocalyptic world. I want to see that. That's they've done the horror zombie genre, they've done the action cop, Bad Boys 2 Point Break genre with Hot Fuzz, and then they've done this, I don't know what kind of genre you'd call World's End. It's like a sci-fi Twilight Zone robot takeover type of thing, and now I think they have an opportunity to do a post-apocalyptic movie, and I think they need to expand the trilogy into a quadrology. I don't know what four of them are called.
Now, for those like myself that are uninitiated, Simon Pegg is the dude that played Scotty in the new Star Trek movies, right?
Yes, he's also very heavily involved in the Mission Impossible movies after like the second or third one. I've actually never seen any of them. But
yeah, he's like write, produce, direct. I mean, he's like way involved. Yeah, okay,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I love Simon Pegg and Nick Frost. I follow Nick Frost on Instagram. He goes under the handle Fried Gold, which if you've seen the trilogy, you understand that reference, but okay, I have man feelings for Simon Pegg.
that's fair. Perfectly acceptable.
What about you? What you got going on? Did you guys do anything for Halloween?
We turned the porch light on and opened the door and had zero encounters. So we just live, I guess, in a section or a neighborhood, if you want to call it that, that people don't visit, if they even visit. Now, I suspect that it doesn't occur like it used to, but yet you go online and you'll see people that's like, oh yeah, we had 500 people. And I'm like, wow. I don't know what the difference is. I don't live in a bad part of town. I don't live in a bad town. So I don't know.
I think it depends on the community and if there is a trunk or treat that happens nearby.
They do a lot of that stuff. Not necessarily on Halloween night.
Right.
I mean, my little town, Halloween night has a set date and that's when it occurs. But leading up to it, like churches will have trunk or treat, maybe a school here or there or so, so that's like the week and a half maybe leading up to Halloween. So I guess, I don't know. I mean, when I was growing up, that would have just been added to the list. It's not like just the one thing would have sufficed.
Right, right.
I'd hit all those bitches that I could find. I mean, so it's, I don't know.
But when we were kids, our parents would put us in the costumes and go on. And then we'd just go out and do it.
Well, yeah, it was okay to do that. Yeah, yeah.
Nowadays, I was telling my daughter, I said, if the trunk or treat was as prevalent then as they were now, I said, that's... I would have just taken you to that and just that's it. I wouldn't drive you all over damn town. It's just not something I want to do.
I don't know, man. I mean, it's yeah, it is easier. You know, you just park over here and pat them on the behind and say, okay, go through all the little cars over there. And when you get done, come back over here and we'll head home. Yeah. I don't know. I was talking to a coworker and she was talking about when she was little, remembering staying out until like midnight trick-or-treating. I'm like, I don't remember that.
When I was a teenager, sure.
Well, I'm not sure you could call it trick-or-treating, could you? I mean, that's, you know.
You throw a mask on, you get out there, you get some candy, and then you just get up to some no good.
With your rolls of toilet paper, and
You know what? I have never in my life toilet papered a house or egged a house. Never done that. I've done some stuff, but I've never done that.
The worst I did is put a college professor's house up for sale. We drove around in like a 5 or 10 mile radius and pulled up all of the for sale signs that we saw, and then went back to his yard and stuck them all in his yard.
Oh my God, that's funny.
It was. We thought it was pretty funny. Yeah, especially since the next day we did this on a Sunday night. The next day, the first class we had in school was with that professor in college. Yeah. So of course we went to that class and heard him bitching about these stupid kids that were, and we're like, oh yeah, that's terrible. Yeah. So
do you got a lot of kids in your neighborhood?
In the immediate neighborhood, I don't believe, honestly, we have any.
That probably has a lot to do with it.
3, 4, 5. We have 5 houses on my little dead end street here. Well, but I am the middle house.
Yeah.
There's 2 before and 2 after. At the other side of the 2 before is an intersection with a street that breaks into 3 or 4 other streets that, you know, compromises the actual neighborhood itself. So directly here, no kids, but there's probably within several hundred yards, there's probably 20 families that have kids. So, I mean, just not immediately. I don't know.
That's weird.
That's okay. No big deal.
All right. Banter complete.
All right.
Today we're looking at Superman versus the Rainmaker, which is the Superman story that appears in World's Best Comics #1. It was written by Jerry Siegel with art by Paul Cassaday, and it has a cover date of 1941. That's the cover date. Just 1941.
1941.
That's the one comic they're going to put out that year. But according to Mike's Amazing World of Comics, it went on sale on February 10th, 1941. And here is what happened in the issue. B. Drexel Rutherford is approached by a man claiming that he can cause rain. The man attempts to blackmail Rutherford, but the business owner refuses. The Rainmaker then proves his power by creating storms which damage Rutherford's business. Rutherford tells his story to Clark Kent after Superman rescues him. The Rainmaker threatens to break a local dam, so Superman goes into action. He is unable to stop the dam from bursting, but he does divert the water. Superman then saves Lois, who is held hostage by the criminal.
Of course.
Ed, what'd you think?
I liked it. I did like it. Now, I do want to ask a question.
Okay.
For some reason, and it could just be me in reading this morning. I read both of these this morning. I thought that there was a lot more action than in previous stories, quickly followed up by the story from Action, which also seemed to be rather full. Here is an example from the World's Best Story. Okay. We have a fire. Okay. We have an issue with a bus, a runaway bus. We have an explosion near the dam that causes a collapsing building. We then have some gunplay. We have a giant snake. We have a group of men with guns. We then have a gas gun that is used against Superman. The rain itself, which you would hope would come into play at some point, and it does here finally, which causes some issues with the dam, as you would expect, and you can kind of foresee the kind of problems it would cause without me having to say it. We'll go into that in a minute. You have the plane going down, of course, that Lois is on, going to the dam, arriving much too late, really, to be of any use. And then you have some more gunplay to finish up the story. So all of that occurs in 13 pages. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, which is very close to one thing per page.
Oh yeah.
I mean, a scene per page.
Yep.
Yeah. It's just this. And it, when I got done reading it, it just struck me that there really weren't too many like quiet times, travel moments, talking heads like we have had in some of the other stories to build up the story. The action seemed to be the story. And then they just linked the actions as, you know, this person who was responsible did this and he sent people to do that. And but it, you know, all the actiony things were linked together to make the story. And it just stuck out to me. Go ahead.
Well, I wonder if they're like, look, this is the first issue of this new anthology book. Do, you know, pull out all the stops, make this one big.
Well, I have 9 things in 13 pages for the action story.
Not, you know, the action story. And of course, we'll talk about that next episode. But there is a lot happening in that. That one is almost more chaotic and confusing at times.
In a way, yeah.
But it's all like, it's like the action in that one, it's the action all kind of fits together in regard. It's the same theme for that story. It all the action. But right. With this one and more best, it's like you said, there's just these weird little, the fire, the bus that gets out of control, let's go through the story and then we'll okay. talk about these things individually. And I will say real quick, the art in this story was freaking amazing. This is the best I think Superman has looked in a while. And it's Cassaday. So it's the guy that's been doing the last number Handful. Of stories that we've read. And but he really knocked it out of the park on this one. All right. So we open up at the B. Drexel Rutherford. He's a utilities guy.
Yeah. First, let me mention the cover. Sitting somewhere, wouldn't have been a spinner rack at this time. Probably it would have been those flat racks on the wall. You're looking at the comic books and you see a book and you look at it. Let's see. 96 pages, it says on the cover. Okay, that's a pretty good deal. But the individuals pictured are Superman, Robin, and Batman. Okay, right there. I mean, if you know anything about DC Comics or superhero comics at the time, that's it. But then you read on and you see Red, White, and Blue. I have no idea who that is. And Zatara. Zatara, I know. But actually, there are 3 or 4 other named stories with characters that I recognize that weren't even featured on the cover. So if you picked it up and then started flipping through it, this was a heck of a comic at the time. Almost with the covers, you can probably say 100 pages for, I don't know what this was, probably 25 cents.
I can find out real quick.
25 or 35 cents. I mean, it couldn't have been way, way much because of the time, but, I can't imagine seeing this first issue and not being interested in buying it as a kid who, like I say, either has been reading Superman or has been reading Batman. Oh, heck, now both of them are in the same book. I pick it up to flip through it and see what else. You know, there's a Crimson Avenger story and there's some, there's a war hero. There's a private detective. There's some funny, quasi-romantic, kind of little bit more teeny kind of related thing. So it's just full of stuff.
It was 15 cents.
15, okay. Yeah, so 15 for 100 pages.
God. Yeah, and I think like Action Comics is a dime. So
yeah,
five more cents. And yeah, Johnny Thunder is also in this.
Yes, yes.
And then a bunch of people that, like you said, I don't recognize any of their names, but still.
Yeah, they've been filling out probably Detective and Action
One, two, three,
and some
four,
of the others.
5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. But, 11 stories in this book.
Yeah. And I also noticed that the bookends, Superman was the first of the bigger stories, and Batman and Robin was the last of the bigger stories, both of them 13 pages. So you bracket and
And if you notice on that cover, you got Batman and Robin with these big smiles on their faces. Superman's, you might call it a smile. It's not quite a smile. It's more of a, like a, it makes me think of a Clint Eastwood steely stare. Like,
Not quite a grimace, but not quite happy. It's, but he is showing teeth nonetheless. Yeah. So that's supposed to be a good sign.
Well, yeah, but it's kind of funny to think about the fact that just looking at this cover, it's almost like Superman is the dark character.
Yeah, wouldn't it be flipped?
While Batman and Robin are the lighthearted.
Yeah, it would certainly be flipped nowadays, that's for sure.
Oh, yeah, but, totally, yeah.
Okay, sorry.
All right, so we go to the office of B. Drexel Rutherford, the head of Rutherford Utilities, and this dude has come to see him to tell him that he knows how to make it rain. He can make it rain. And he proves it to Rutherford by telling him it's going to rain in 5 minutes, and then in 5 minutes it rains.
The Superman Super Show will return after these messages.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
And now, back to the Superman Super Show.
And he tells Rutherford that he wants payment from him. He doesn't say how much. He wants payment. And if he doesn't get this money from him, he is going to destroy Rutherford's dam that is in Imperial Valley. And Rutherford's like, no, you know, you're obviously a psycho. You're crazy to think you can make it rain. And he goes to get, they actually refer to him as the office bouncer. Uh-huh. So instead of a security guard, they got a bouncer, and the guy pulls a Batman on him. So Rutherford goes to the door, calls for the bouncer, turns around. The guy's gone. He's disappeared.
Yep.
And so then we get a series of accidents that happen to various employees of Rutherford. First is just the company picnic, and it rains on the company picnic. That's like, ah, right. Oh, that sucks, but all right, whatever. And then an executive drowns the next day. Another executive dies in some kind of terrible storm. And we go from there to Clark Kent. He's out on the street. A fire engine goes streaking by. And I love the way that that's drawn, that they really added a lot of motion lines to that fire engine. And I really like it.
Yeah. I do want to say, you mentioned the art. I did not think in this reproduction that the coloring hurt the art in this particular story.
Yes. Yeah.
I have said before that this oversaturation of the reproduced art just typically doesn't work. Here, the art is still just as vibrantly colored. That's not changed. But I think the amount of detail has picked up, and then you have issues, like you said, where they have done certain things to increase the interest in the panel.
Yeah.
Action, motion lines, things happening. And so it doesn't need as much single block color, and it doesn't need as much color either, because there's so much more detail. So something, yeah, either with this book or with the state of art at the time, something changed in this, and it reproduced a little bit better, I think, than a lot of the other stories have.
I agree. And they didn't, like you said, they didn't overdo it, because if you look at those two panels with the fire engine, there's two colors plus gray. There's yellow and there's red. Well, there's the blue of Clark's suit.
Right.
But otherwise, it's yellow and red, and then there's gray and white.
Right. Well, blue is partially red, isn't it? Don't you get blue? It is blue, red plus something? No. Red and blue make green. Red and blue. Yeah.
Yellow and blue make green. Red and blue and yellow are the three primary colors.
Okay. So,
but
yeah, I'm not an artist. I was a musician in college. That's what I did. So it's, yeah.
Rock and roll. But so this fire engine streaks by, and Clark decides he's just going to leap on the fire engine.
Yeah.
Because he hasn't chased a fire in years. And the fireman that's also on the side of the truck turns back to and sees Clark there just hanging off the truck. And he doesn't really cry out in alarm or surprise. He just kind of goes, "Say, I don't remember you. Where did you come from?" And Clark just tells him, "Hey, I've been here the whole time, man. Don't you remember?" And so I guess he just lets Clark stay.
Yeah, whatever. I guess it happens every day that somebody jumps on a fire truck. It's Yeah.
Now, when we get to these final two panels, when we're talking about the coloring, while they, again, they didn't do it's this reproduction of the coloring isn't something that makes you go, you know, it doesn't make you hate the coloring like some of the reproductions do. But these two panels are examples of where it does look like they either use some type of brush with these colors or it's digital.
Yeah.
To me, that stood out a bit, but still, it's not an overuse of colors. I think when it comes to digital coloring, some people can really overdo it and oversaturate and it's just too much. But anyway, Clark gets to the fire. He sees that there's somebody up in the upper floor of this house, and he knows that the firemen won't be able to get to them. So he changes into Superman and he saves them. And they happen to be old Mr. Rutherford and his wife.
Wow. And, yeah, what a coincidence.
Yeah. Mr. Rutherford has grown quite paranoid. So as soon as Superman comes bursting through their open top floor window, he yanks out a gun. Of course, who wouldn't? I'm sorry. Some dude just jumps in your window in the middle of a fire and he's wearing a crazy costume. The gun is probably a good bet.
Mm-hmm.
But Superman gets the gun from him, grabs them both, tells him to just no back talk. You're coming with me. Leaps out the window with him, saves them. Changes back into Clark so then he can go get the story.
Right.
And that's when he learns from Rutherford of the Rainmaker. And this, I love this bit here because I love that Rutherford, all this crap has happened to him. He's had at least two people on his team murdered. He's had his house set on fire and he's still like, screw this guy. I'm not putting up with this crap. You know, instead of, you know, he could very well be like, oh, no, nothing's wrong, Mr. Clark Kent, and thinking I'm going to have to give this guy some money. Right, no, he's like, I'm not going to let this guy get away with this. He's very upset about it. And his wife, it is best you tell everything. That's probably one of my favorite lines of the book.
She has her hand under her hair.
I'm going to faint. It is best that you tell him everything. So he tells Clark. Clark refers to the Rainmaker as a ruthless cuss. So Clark needs to calm down. And then he steps out into the street and is immediately run over by a bus.
Very literally. He doesn't do anything. He gets run over by the bus.
He gets run over by the bus. He's able to stop the bus from underneath. He breaks open a window. There's carbon monoxide gas in the bus. And then they do something that I don't think they've done in a Superman comic yet. We see it all the time now, but this might be the first time, I don't know, but he runs around the bus in super speed, sucking all of the gas out of the bus, funneling it out and
dispersing
it into the air. Yeah. And then we learn that, this is the guy, the bus driver's first day, and Clark realizes that this bus is controlled by Rutherford and his associates. So could the Rainmaker have struck again? Maybe. They don't tell us for sure. So
no, we never find out.
So really, we get these two moments of action that seem to have nothing to do, just these random moments, and yet they're still tied into what's going on.
Right. Yeah. If nothing else, they're connected by name both times.
So yeah. So instead of like Rutherford coming into the paper to tell them I need to know somebody to know what's happening with this bad guy that's trying to blackmail me. They add a bit of action to get Clark to meet Rutherford. I like that. They were given an edict.
Mm-hmm.
Every page must have some action on it in all 13 pages of the story. So Superman Clark goes to the chief at the planet, tells him what's going on. And the chief just says, as he's reading the newspaper, He's listening to Clark from behind a newspaper, which is kind of rude, but he just says, go to it. Well, and so
maybe he's proofreading the next edition.
Hey, man, he maybe is.
Somebody's got to do it. So, you know,
having gone through many management training courses and leadership kind of things, that's you want to listen. You want to engage in what they call active listening.
Make them feel that what they have to say right. is important.
And the way you do that is by you look at them.
Make eye contact.
You nod your head and you smile. Do that. That's active listening. He's smoking and reading the newspaper.
I'm the first person to say, go ahead. I hear with these. I don't hear with these. Yeah, so, go ahead. I can. Yeah. Yeah.
So. So anyway, Clark runs to the roof, changes into Superman, and leaps off into the day to go figure out what's going on with Rutherford and the Rainmaker. In the meantime, Lois bursts into the chief's office, says she's looked all over but can't find Clark anywhere, and the chief is angry. Why'd he rush off like that? Well, chief, probably because you told him to go to it.
You told him to go.
So he wants, because the chief wants Lois to go with him, and so he sends Lois off. And the panel makes me think the way she comes in and says, sorry, I looked all over but couldn't find him, makes me think that he had asked her, go find Clark.
Right. Bring him here so that he could tell them both. I want both of you to go. Yeah.
So I don't know how much time has elapsed between Clark talking to the chief, going up on top of the building, jumping away, and then Lois coming into the room. But it's almost like as soon as Clark left, the chief was like, find me Clark Kent. So, Lois gets on a plane. Clark arrives at the dam to find a building, like a utility building, probably outside the dam, exploding. He, of course, is leaping. He's not flying yet. We're not quite there. We're getting close. He goes into the office. He saves the two guys there. Well, no, there's three guys.
There's three guys, yeah.
And then some dude, some stranger, just comes up to Superman and hands him a slip of paper and says, one word, read.
Read.
It just cracks me up. Read. And so he reads the paper, and it's a warning from the Rainmaker telling him not to interfere. The thug tells him that you want to listen to the boss. You don't want to cross him.
Look at these three panels. When he's handing Superman the note here in the first one, no cigarette. The next one,
cigarette, yep.
He's got a cigarette. In the third one, he has no cigarette. Yeah, so
the third one, I can almost, I don't know, either they talk really slow, and as Superman's reading the note, one word at a time, the guy lights up a cigarette, starts smoking, right. And then by the time they get to the panel three, he's finished it and tossed it away.
Sure, that's possible.
In that third panel, you don't see either of his hands. He could be holding a cigarette. In the fourth panel of this segment, one of his hands is off panel, so he could be holding the cigarette in that hand.
Still, okay.
But by the last panel, there's no cigarette at all.
It's a try, but I don't buy it. But okay, all right.
This scene here with this guy, I think, might be my favorite scene in the story because. Okay. Him walking up to Superman, handing him the paper, and just saying, read.
Just walking up to him, It's like, so what, he was standing over here, waiting for Superman. And
he's chilling, watching the building burn.
Yeah, it's like, oh, there he is. Okay, I got to go deliver the message.
Casually, he's just so cocky and confident. Yeah. And so Superman tells him that, he's not going to listen to the boss. He's going to interfere, so that's just the way it is. And he walks away from the guy, tosses the note behind his back.
Well, the panel before, though, don't forget it. It has your favorite affectation in the speech. Oh,
yeah. So when he tells him
Superman says,
he's not going to do anything. He's going to keep doing what he's doing. The threats mean nothing to him. And the thug says, so that's how it is, eh? Because that's how they talked back then, especially if you were a thug and a gangster.
Right. If you were a bad guy.
That's when Superman just turns his back on him, tosses the note behind him at the guy, and says, you heard me. And this guy, just that panel where he says, so that's how it is, you can see the anger in his face. Uh-huh. The fact that anybody would defy the boss, just he's super pissed. And so he immediately pulls a gun and shoots Superman in the back.
Yep.
And
also keep in mind this suit that this dude is wearing.
Almost as ugly as the suit that Clark's wearing in the next.
Issue
we're going to talk about the next episode.
It's the exact same. It's like, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Clark, dude.
This leads to my second favorite moment, because first, to continue with this scene, he shoots Superman in the back. The bullet bounces off. Superman turns around as the guy is scratching his head and looking at the gun and say, "It bounced off." And Superman responds with, "And I've a notion to bounce my fist off your chin," which is a great line. But instead, he just grabs the guy up and says, "You're going to take me to the laboratory where your boss is." And the guy's like, "Well, that's miles away." And Superman's like, "That's all right. We can get there pretty quick," and leaps up into the air with the guy.
Yep. So basically, I guess he threatens to drop the guy somewhere along the way to get him to tell.
Probably. So they land outside what looks like a barn, which houses the laboratory of the Rainmaker. And this is where we just dive into that level of ridiculousness that I love so much in these old Superman comics.
Need some kind of action here.
He is attacked not by a guard dog,
nope,
but by a guard giant boa constrictor. And if you look at all four panels that this snake is in, that snake's mouth is wide open in all four panels. It just, first of all, this is a super fast snake, because it obviously just leaps onto Superman, wrapping itself around him super quick. Because Superman wouldn't allow a boa constrictor to just casually, because they're not that fast.
Right. Yeah.
You know, but it's just there. Bam. Wrapped around him. Superman, I thought, was going to burst the snake apart.
No, that would be so mean to the snake.
He's flexing. And the snake, he kind of comes loose and he ties the snake to a tree, that's what you do. I mean, how many cartoons have we seen from like the 60s where something like this has happened?
Giant snake, and it's big enough and you just tie it to something to get away. Yeah.
And so I'm going to put a challenge out to all of our listeners and viewers and everything. Is this the first time we ever see a hero tie a big snake to a tree? Because I've seen it often, but is this the first time? Is every time we've seen it since because Superman did it? Let us know, supermansupershow@gmail.com.
Okay.
So here's that bit of action. He fights a snake, but that's not enough. A big gaggle of men dressed exactly the same in brown suits and ties come running out with pistols and Tommy guns, and Superman just decks them all like in one punch, it looks like. And that's when, as he's breaking all their guns, that's when the Rainmaker comes out and shoots Superman with a paralysis gas gun. And it actually affects Superman. The guy tells him that the discharge was enough to have killed 1,000 ordinary men. Why would he have that in a gun?
That would be very dangerous just to have around, I would think.
What if he dropped it?
Anything. I mean,
if one discharge is enough to kill 1,000 ordinary men, what if he accidentally dropped it and a little bit just leaked out? He's dead.
A whiff could kill 3, 4, 5 men. I mean, everybody in a room. I mean,
And the fact that he's firing it off without wearing any kind of gas mask, what if the wind changed? he'd be dead. Yep. So I wonder if this has ever been retconned as maybe the guy created this gas gun by some kind of mineral that he found, a green rock. Kryptonite. Could this be the first instance of kryptonite being used on Superman?
Why would he think that it would have any effect just because it's green? I mean,
because he's a comic book scientist, madman. Yeah. It's like, this looks fun. I'll make some gas out of this. The gas is green.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is. Yeah. But green usually denotes poison.
Oh, yeah. So. That's true. I just, if it hasn't been retconned, it needs to be.
Well, somebody. Throw it out there. Tom King will do that. Or whoever's doing Superman next. Yeah.
Yep. So anyway, Superman he's not, obviously he didn't die. He's not like paralyzed, I don't think, because he goes with the Rainmaker. He tells him, "You come with me now and you're going to watch me do all my evil things." And so Superman goes with him. So basically he's just not Superman anymore. He's just not strong.
Right.
But They go into the laboratory. The guy turns on his rainmaking machine and he's cackling and he's twisting his mustache and he's doing all the bad guy, mad scientist stuff. And all the while, Superman is just straining. He's just flexing and straining and just trying to just overcome the effects of this gas when suddenly, bam, he's better. Just like that. Boom, better. All right, let's kick some ass. And which, of course, he does by popping the guy in the chin. And he goes outside. He sees that the rain is coming down really hard, looks back into the laboratory, and he can see through his X-ray vision that even though he punched the Rainmaker in the chin, the guy's back up and he's dancing around. Rain, rain, yay. He's saying, more rain, more. I'll show them. I'll wipe that dam off the face of the earth. He's got his hands over his head and he's just dancing around. And Superman is like, oh my God, this guy is insane. And so he pushes the laboratory off of a cliff into the river.
Okay. Now, at first, I thought that he had pushed the dude in because he was in the laboratory. But I guess not, because he's outside dancing in the rain and Superman pushes the building. So I guess he was outside.
Well,
and it kind of comes up in a little bit, too. So,
yeah, I just assumed that that panel of him dancing was he's inside and we're looking at him through the window from the outside.
The Superman Super Show will return after these messages. And now back to the Superman Super Show.
Okay, but wouldn't that make it virtually impossible for him to pop back up?
That's what I thought on this page. I thought, all right, well, Superman killed him.
Yeah, yeah, he got tired of him and pushed the building that he was in over.
Yeah.
But this maybe this panel is the saving grace and the dude really wasn't in it. He was right beside it, but outside.
Yeah, and so the purpose of pushing the laboratory into the river is more about deactivating the machine.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. But it cracks me up to think that the guy was in the building, though, because, you know, some people, a normal powered person may be faced with a guy dancing around crazy. Ah, the rain would go, shut up, and push him over. Superman goes, shut up, and pushes his building into a river.
Okay, yeah. he takes it out on the whole building rather than the dude, yeah.
We get one panel of Lois still in the airplane, because Lois has to be a part of this story. And they are having problems on the airplane because there's a big storm. And what they would have called a stewardess at the time tells her to buckle up. Superman races to the dam just in time to see it burst.
Right.
But then he digs a pit and throws a boulder to a certain spot. And he is able to divert the flow of the water to an area where there's not farms and people living in junk. The plane starts to go down.
Lois is up and walking around.
Lois is up and walking around. She does not do what people tell her.
No. I mean, if the plane is going down, why in the world did she get up to walk around and do anything?
Yeah. She said, the lady tells her, we're in the middle of a storm. Sit down, buckle up. And Lois just gives her the middle finger and stands up.
Yep. Basically. Jumps up and starts yelling, we're falling.
Yeah.
So.
But of course, it appears that the stewardess is Lois's twin sister. So.
It could be. Yes. Yeah. Yes. It is. But, it is Lois from Earth Other.
Yes.
Yeah. It's
so the plane is going down. Clark leaps up into the air, grabs the plane. And even though he can't fly, he's able to make it land safely just because he caught it in the air. I don't understand that.
It goes down and he keeps it from crashing. To me, the most impressive thing, though, was in the floodwaters, as they're washing over Superman, he's standing there holding the plane up above his head as the waters are rushing, you know, by him. And you see a building over here at the side to show you that it's massive floodwaters. And then when it passes, he sets the plane down. Yeah.
So this is where we get, okay, I've changed my mind. This is my favorite part of the story.
Okay.
Because just so we can have something for Lois to do, she gets out of the plane.
Right.
And then immediately the Rainmaker bursts out of a bush with a gun and grabs her and takes her hostage because That's Lois's role still at this point.
She has to be involved in the story, so yeah.
However, the saving grace here is that as he's standing there, holding her by the wrist, gun pointed at her, she's telling everybody around them, there's a couple of policemen, and Superman's there, and she's yelling at them, "Don't mind me, rush him." And when nobody does, she takes matters into her own hands and slaps the dude so hard that he lets go of her and drops. And that allows Superman to rush in as the guy then takes a shot at Lois, and he blocks the bullet with his hand. You know, I've noticed that a lot lately. When we think of people shooting at Superman, we always think of like the George Reeves TV show where he's standing there with his hands on his hips and the bullets are bouncing off of his chest. Most of the time, if he knows the shots are coming, or if he's jumping in front of a bullet, he tends to deflect them with his hands more than anything. He either catches the bullet or knocks it aside. And that's kind of what he's doing here. He's deflecting it with his hand. And then in the most shocking, out of all of this, the most shocking bit of story, Superman goes chasing after the Rainmaker. The Rainmaker trips, falls, cracks his head on a big stone on the ground, and is dead.
Yep, that's
it. Dead. And Superman, very casually, hands on hips, he'll no longer menace or blackmail anyone. He's dead. Lois says, "How awful." And then he tells Clark. Superman tells everybody to get back into the airplane. And it's a pilot. It's not the cop. It's the pilot. He says, I don't think it's airworthy. Lois says, "Just listen to the man." And Superman picks up the airplane and leaps back to Metropolis with it.
Yeah.
Where he quickly calls Rutherford to tell him that everything's cool now, and changes back into Clark just in time to file the story. And we get that typical last panel. Lois is upset because Clark got the scoop. She didn't see him at all during the whole adventure, even though she was in the plane for most of it. But Clark, she says, how in the world did you ever get the details of the story? And Clark says, "How? Merely by sticking on the job while you go gallivanting about the country on a joyride." Wah, wah, the end. And that's probably when they would both pull their heads back to laugh, and in mid-laugh, ha, it'd freeze and the credits would start rolling.
Right, yeah. This has gotten to be a thing now where Clark is scooping Lois almost every time. Didn't used to be that way, but somewhere along the way, there was a switch, and now... And I guess it's because they realize that it's funny because Clark is never there.
Right.
Superman is. Lois is there. See Superman. Clark's... And she never puts together that there is some connection between Clark and Superman. It's just completely alien to her that they're... Yeah.
Well, and then the fact that he, you know, he's such a coward. The very idea of him really just sticking around and getting the story... Just doesn't seem like something that Clark Kent would do, and yet, yeah,
we really see how big a coward he is. It's really forward in the next story that we talk about too.
Yes, that's a good one. A little tease for the next episode.
Poor guy. Yeah,
yeah. But so not only has it become this trope now where Clark scoops Lois, but it's the ending of it's been the ending of the last five stories at least.
Okay,
the last 1 to 2 panels. Where Lois is like, "Oh my gosh, you got the story. How did you do that?" And he either says, "Because I'm a great reporter," basically, or "Because Superman helped me out." You know, one of those two things. So, But yeah, that was something. I really enjoyed it. It was a lot of fun. It looked great. I feel like Superman is being drawn even beefier in this story.
Yeah.
He seems to be more, his muscles are more defined, his chest is more broad. His shoulders are more broad. So, I mean, just look at this last page, the second panel. Look at that image of Superman. It's like he's got this thick bull neck and this he looks like a weightlifter.
Yeah, he does. Yeah. Like, just a bodybuilder there.
He hasn't always looked like that. So I find that very interesting.
And, you know, what we know of his powers, he doesn't have to. His powers have nothing to do with his physique, essentially. So Now, at the time, they hadn't developed it that far, but now, which would make sense given how they explain his powers, it's like, well, you know, he could look like a scrawny 16-year-old kid. It's not going to matter.
Yeah. Yeah, that's something I remember back when me and my buddy Harold were going to do a comic book together. We were coming up with the look of somebody, one of the guys. I think it was a bad guy. And I'm like, let's not make him, he's super strong, but let's not make him a big hulking muscular, you know, what they do nowadays. If you're super strong, chances are you're either going to be like a weightlifter type or like the frickin' Hulk. You're going to be like 9 feet tall and super giant muscular. I said, let's make him a skinny dude, you know, a frail looking skinny dude who can pick up a bus, you know, because
really throw people off because he doesn't look like it, which, you know, again, depending on what you're doing, could very much be the point, you know?
Yeah. When you see a panel of a frail skinny dude holding a bus up, that almost seems more, whoa, what's that? You know,
right.
You see the Hulk picking up a bus. It's like, okay, he looks like he could pick up a bus. All right. What do you got? What do you think about this one? What are some of your favorite moments?
I enjoyed it quite a bit. That's not a good word for it, because it wasn't a particularly good moment. But I thought it was a very telling moment, perhaps in the writing, which is a reflection of the author's mentality, which is a reflection of what is going on around him at the time, in that the bad guys, he's running away, trips and falls, hits his head, and dies. It's like not some accident that in doing something Superman caused a cave-in and the bad guy was caught in the cave-in, or in getting Lois away just in time from the explosion kills the bad guy, or, you know, any of these other possibilities. This is like, no, dude tried to shoot Superman. It doesn't work. So he's running away to get away from Superman. Superman doesn't do anything to him. The bad guy himself trips and falls, hits his head on a rock, and that kills him. And I just thought, what, that is, wow.
It's a stupid accident. And something we have to remember is Jerry Siegel, the writer of the pair, his dad died when he was a teenager, maybe. Somebody, one or two, I don't remember, broke into their business, held his dad up, and his dad died of a heart attack because of it. And so it was like his dad, I think the rumor or the myth is that he was shot down by the burglar, and that's why Siegel created a man who was bulletproof. But I think that's been debunked, that his dad actually died of a heart attack. But it was either during or right after, it was due to the robbery. And so his dad died in such a, you know, it's one of those that life is just stupid. Right. When it comes to stuff like that, you know, he could have had, obviously they needed to wrap this up really quick, and he could have just as easily had Superman grab the guy and
hand him off to somebody in the airplane and say, here, take care of him.
Yep.
We'll all, the rest of this, get in the airplane and I'll take the airplane back and all that. But it's like, no, we'll just get rid of the bad guy by having him die. And then that way we don't have to worry. Yeah. I just thought that was very... I will say, perhaps stuff like that goes on a lot more in the pulp stories of the time, which I am not familiar with, but I have been leaning a lot more towards trying to find just to see what they're like. I mean, a pulp novel from this time is like 120 pages. What is that? Like 3 hours worth of reading nowadays. I mean, that's nothing. So it's the pulp stories that a lot of these heroes have been based on, and their heroes as they were brought over to comic books, has been a kind of a recent rabbit hole for me. I haven't quite taken the jump to try to find them and read them, but I've been doing my due diligence and making lists of what I want to try to find maybe. I just thought that was, you know, leading up to it, there still was a lot of violence. You know, there was a lot of gunplay. Explosions, possible building collapsing on people, didn't happen. The flood, that is a not funny, horrible, terrible thing to happen, but he got away from it by diverting the waters. So,
yep.
You know, so I mean, there was a lot of potentially really big issues.
Giant snake.
Avoided, you know, the yeah. bad guys with the Tommy guns after the snake.
Yep.
Nothing really, you know, there's nothing, they don't show anything bad happening.
Right. Nobody is seriously injured.
No, until the very end of the story. Like,
yep.
what is this? One page, like 10 panels-ish from the end of the story.
Yep.
A dude falls down, hits his head, and dies. It's like, what does that have to do with anything? Well, I mean, he was the bad guy, but the way he died, it has nothing to do with anything. And maybe right. that's the point.
It makes you feel like they wrote that, they put that there for a purpose. There was something there. There's something they're trying to say with that. And I think it's just that, look at all this crazy shit that can happen. And in the end, this guy died because of a stupid accident.
Right.
You know,
the fate still caught up with him I mean, whatever your thinking is, but yeah, I thought that was probably the most impactful element of the story to me.
Yep. Yep. And Superman obviously just doesn't care.
Wow. Yeah. I know the Boy Scout is not acting very Boy Scoutish right there.
Yeah. And I think we talk about this. We've talked about this a lot recently when we look at these, but I always kind of wonder, you know, how they would write this story today.
Ooh. Yeah.
And, you know, Superman would probably feel a lot of guilt at the end of the story, because he could have saved him.
Right.
Even after he tripped, Superman could have caught him before he hit the ground. You know, what if earlier in the issue where he popped the guy in the jaw, what if he threw the punch a little too hard, broke the guy's neck, and he died there?
Right.
That would have really messed Superman up.
Nowadays, so, it certainly would have. That would have had Superman not Supermaning for several issues while he tries to get that out of the system.
But in this story, he would have been like, well, he's dead. I guess he can't get up to no good, and he certainly won't be holding Lois hostage here after a bit.
Yeah.
So, yeah. All right. Anything else you want to say about this one?
No, sir. I don't think so.
I do want to say that even though Rutherford is not the bad guy of this one, he is obviously a rich guy. He's a powerful man. And they do draw him as if he was a bad guy. He just has a kind of a sinister,
mm-hmm.
especially that last page of him on the phone with Superman.
He's got a pencil mustache.
Yeah. He looks like he could be a mob boss. And I know that was a big thing of, you know, that's why Superman is the champion of the oppressed. And a mm-hmm. lot of those early stories were him, you know, remember when he went around Metropolis and destroyed all the car lots and the car factory and stuff like that.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. The stuff that was preying on the good people. He just went on a rampage and just was messing with all of it. Yeah.
Yep. If this Superman was around today, you know, with the Jeff Bezos and the you know, the Tesla guy, Elon Musk's, you know, I just wonder what he'd be doing. Would he be destroying Cybertrucks?
Yeah, really. Taking out AI farms.
Yeah,
and
All right. Let's wrap this sucker up then. I'm never really sure how to end these anymore. But yeah, that was World's Best Comics, which, Ed, you say it changes, the title changes by the next issue?
Yeah, I believe the second issue, it becomes World's Finest. And that's what we know today.
Let's look here. Yeah, World's Finest Comics. Retains the numbering, so it's number 2. So if you're ever like, I have World's Finest number 2, I can't find World's Finest number 1 anywhere. It's not even on a database. It's because it's got a different name.
Yep.
Yeah, that's got a cover date of summer 1941.
And that's one really cool thing. There is a comic book encyclopedia kind of site that I was a huge fan of, and many, many people were, that got sold and then just crushed under the boot of whatever corporation. But one good thing I do like about the Grand Comics database is that when you find a book, if you trace the book back, it will tell you a previous title, even if it has nothing to do, like it was a romance and it became a Western and then it became a horror comic and then whatever, it will tell you the title and give you a link that you could go back and hit that. And then you get the entry of that book and you can see how far it went. You go to the earliest issue of that. If it changed names again, it'll give you the name. And I mean, you can, with a little bit of effort, you can track down books that have had completely different titles, but maintained the numbering. And so in essence are the same book. Nowadays that doesn't happen too much, but back in, like, I was just looking at some Charlton books, and there are some books that went like through five or six completely different things through the course of 40 or 50 issues.
They do a fairly good job of that over at Mike's Amazing World.
Okay. So I've not actually looked there for it. Okay.
Yeah. With this particular issue, for example, so if I go to, cause I'm looking at it right now, World's Best Comics, number one, when he has them all lumped together, you know, as a series. So there's a button here where I can go to the next issue and that'll take me to World's Finest Comics, number two.
Okay.
So I've noticed that with the Conan issues, because there is a giant sized Conan between, I think, the issue 29, which I talked about on the last issue, and issue 30, which is coming out on Wednesday, Conan the Barbarian issue number 30. There's a king size or a giant size Conan number one between those two issues, but it's a reprint, which is why I didn't cover it.
Okay. So he takes you there and then takes you to the next book. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And he also will tell you, for a lot of these, he'll list the various collections that you can find them in as well.
Okay. So, well, Grand Comics database will give you reprints where it's reprinted.
Nice.
It'll also tell you if the story you're reading is a reprint and where that is originally from.
Nice.
That has come into play a couple times in the Pacific Comics books that I've been looking at, like Bernie Wrightson in particular. He has taken several stories, brought them over and put them together for a book at Pacific, but they're all reprints from Eerie and Creepy and stuff like that he did. And he's just brought them with him and packaged them for a book for that company. So kind of a reverse reprint, a preprint or whatever you would call it.
All right. Well, until next week, folks, my name is Steven. That's Ed. And this was the Superman Super Show. Bye.
Ciao.
We want to thank you for listening to this episode of the Superman Super Show. Questions and comments can be directed to the Superman Super Show at gmail.com. If you enjoyed the show, you can help to boost our presence online by leaving a rating or review on your favorite podcast app. The Superman Super Show is a presentation of Steven or Else Media. For more nerdy content just like this, check out stevenorelse.com or just use the link in your show notes. Superman is a registered trademark of DC Comics and was created by Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster.
Superman is a copyrighted feature appearing in Action Comics magazine.
Superman's bad. I mean, he was bad.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.